Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Cindy Wolf.
And I'm Tony Foreman. And Cindy, you jumped my line. We're obviously live today. You can reach us 410-662-8780 or send us an email, foremanwolf@wipr.org. And we're going to talk about what's on everybody's mind.
Yeah, unfortunately. The heat.
Yeah, that's with how do you survive this, you know, the multiple days of 100 degrees plus in a row.
How do you eat and drink when it's this hot? You know, what do you do to make yourself feel good, you know, to make it better, to make yourself happy, to, you know, get through it because you've got kids to feed and...
We do to do what food is for. I mean, food is food and wine, the table are for, you know, showing care about other folks. So,
absolutely.
You know, that's, I know the first way that I would show care for other folks, I would get one of those nice watermelons from market.
Yes.
Whether one of the yellow ones or
beautiful.
Ruby reds.
The ruby reds are really a cool color. They're sort of orange. And
cut a fat slice of that guy.
Yeah. Mm.
And I would pour a very cold glass of vino verde.
Oh.
And I would float that piece of watermelon in there.
All right.
And let it get full of vino verde and then take a bite out of
there
that
guy. There you go. Golly. And it's amazing, you know, there's a reason why they're called watermelon. It's astonishing, the high water content of a watermelon. So I'm surprised it can even absorb some of that vino verde, but that sounds good.
You know, and then you get to wash it down with more vino verde.
There you go. All right.
Which is a low alcohol
wine. You're
you don't
on
want
the
to drink
track.
Too much on this.
And something you can make really cold,
yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah, yeah.
I know, you know, a lot of wine you don't want to make really cold, but hopefully that one you can,
no,
you're okay
one,
with
it's meant
super
to be
cold.
Fresh and crunchy and
well, that's nice. Good.
You know.
How about a really good could we make a cocktail with pureed watermelon in it, maybe?
Absolutely.
That would be
watermelon
fun.
Mojitos can be great.
Oh, that sounds good.
You know, and you can it's funny, I mean that watermelons that there was a dish that we served once upon a time that I love and I'm just remembering it. We're talking watermelons.
Excuse me.
Talking watermelons, we used to compress them to pull some of the water out so that you got more texture from it, and made a salad with fresh goat's cheese and basil.
Yes.
And a vinaigrette that was a little bit spicy.
Oh my gosh, watermelon and goat cheese is so good together.
Yeah. And little toasted sesames, and it was a fantastic dish. And there was... The only cooking involved was toasting the sesame seeds, which takes about 15 seconds in a
right.
hot pan.
Yeah, that's and then get them out of the pan right away because they'll burn.
Yeah, we'll keep cooking.
Yeah, they'll keep going, and it doesn't take long for those little guys to turn too brown.
So what's your, this kind of weather, what's your go-to, I don't want to heat anything in my kitchen? I know you just put a nice new stove in.
Yeah, well, don't need
that
today.
You don't want to use it today.
I'll be using my nice new refrigerator today. I am just totally excited about all this fruit that we're getting because we're having such a great growing season. And after last year, that it was so awful for everyone from a growing standpoint, weather standpoint, I feel like the fruit just like doubled its goodness this year. You know, I mean, like everything's so good. The methyl plums that we're getting that you're bringing us, the what's the other kind of plum?
Mirabelle.
Or the column Shiro's. Those are so pretty. I love those. But the methylies, oh my gosh, I love just every time I take the skin off of methyl. But we made a chilled soup with methyl plums yesterday. And I mean, when it comes down to it, you don't have to add anything to it. Now, if you don't want it to be tart, you can add a little bit of sugar.
chilled fruit soup, if there's a time for it. Right now is
it.
That time.
Right. And I also bought some Bing cherries, and I made chilled fruit soup from Bing cherries. Now, just keep in mind that cherries will oxidize. So I always like to put a little bit of acid in with Bing cherries. So I put in a touch of fresh lime juice when I make Bing cherry soup. And also I lay plastic wrap directly on top of the product so no air can get to it until I'm ready to serve it. But it's still going to oxidize a little bit. It's not a big deal. It certainly doesn't affect the way it tastes. It just drops the color a little bit. But chilled Bing cherry soup, and you know, that requires a little work. You have to obviously have to take the stems off, wash them, take the stems off, and pit them. But it's worth the labor, especially if you're only like making soup for four people or something. I mean, it's when we make it for 75 people that it becomes a bit of a job. But You know, and anytime you work with any of those fruits and want to make soup, just, you know, you can leave the skin on. That's where a lot of the nutrients are and vitamins are. So just wash it well. Sometimes you might have to scrub something a tiny bit, maybe with a towel, a clean kitchen towel, just to make sure you get all the dirt off, because obviously you don't want to puree that into your soup. And it's rare that I strain a fruit soup, but lime juice seems to be...
Because you want the texture.
Yeah, lime juice seems to be my go-to, sort of to with any fresh fruit soup. And we have peaches, we have nectarines, and just the other thing I'm absolutely making today after the show is a goat cheese. I just love goat cheese and raspberries. So I have arugula, goat cheese, raspberries, and I'm going to make a fresh raspberry vinaigrette. And I use a little bit of raspberry vinegar, fresh raspberries. I puree those two things in the blender. I strain that, then I put it back in the blender and just blend in a little bit of corn oil. It's nice and neutral. It won't affect the flavor, but it'll give you the fat that you need for the vinaigrette. And I do put a touch of sugar in if I think the raspberries could use a tiny bit, but I also obviously put salt and pepper in because it's going to be a dressing for a green salad. But, you know, I would also add strawberries to that or any of the stone fruits to that. You could just make a huge... What's nice about arugula is that it has that little bit of heat, and so that gives balance to the
peppery
salad.
It has some snap.
Mm-hmm. And it's nice with the fresh sweet fruit, and the goat cheese is just a nice, you know, fresh goat's milk cheese that has a little bit of acidity level to it. So I just, and a nice amount of pepper on the salad, and it's super simple. It's really good. And you could add fresh tomatoes, but we're not seeing that many fresh tomatoes just yet, which I'm surprised by.
No, well, the one thing this heat will bring is a lot of, the end of the week, a lot of the heirloom tomatoes
will
start coming.
I hope so, because we're really sort of, you know, dying for those things. We just really want to work with them.
They're coming.
But
we've
had lots of other wonderful things. The other thing I would like to work with is from Richfield Farm, we got in some gorgeous patty pan squash. So I'd like to make it, you know, sort of, you know, a dish around that. And one of the things you can do.
Well, let's talk about that in one second.
Okay.
Let's remind people. You can call in if you want to talk about a favorite recipe for a cold dish that you want to share, or if you want to send us an email, foremanwolf@wypr.org, or reach us 410-662-8780. Or if you want a solution or a recipe for something, we very well may have it.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you want ideas of wines that you're not going to damage by chilling the bejesus out of them.
Yeah, I'm curious to hear what people like to do on a hot day like this. And, you know, if you don't feel like standing outside by your grill, which almost sounds like a form of torture to me, quite frankly, today, because it's really humid. I think it's not as hot as they said it was going to be, but
it'll be there.
Really, yeah, I'm sure we'll manage to get there.
You know, that you were talking about the patty pan squash, mm-hmm. and patty pan, zucchini, any of the squashes in that summer squash group. Make me immediately think of a visit a winery in Argentina, probably 2008, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I was visiting a bunch of them. And one of the wineries was this very space age looking new
Catena?
Facility. Not Catena.
Oh.
With the pyramid and all that sort of business. No, this is an unusual one. It's a fellow who moved from Spain, and we can talk about it when we get into an Argentine wine program. Regardless, his wife was a chef, and they had a small cafe there. And the first thing she served was really pristine zucchini. You could use patty pan the same way. But carpaccio made with that, sliced incredibly thin. And just with that, lemon, parmigiano, seasoned with salt and pepper, and a whole lot of cilantro.
Yum.
And it was just marvelous.
Yeah, I do the same thing, actually.
Just marvelous.
It is one of my favorite things. I started making... zucchini carpaccio when I had my farm, and had fresh
zucchini. A lot grows, so you got to do a lot of stuff with it.
Totally, and I mean, just picking it that morning and bringing it down to the restaurant, and you know, how could it possibly be any fresher or better? So
yeah.
Then I would make carpaccio, and the first time I did that, I used a piece from Neal's Yard Dairy in London. It's a piece called Old Ford, and grated that on there. Oh my goodness! So there's a lot of different cheeses you could, but I think you want something that's a pressed piece that's got some age to it, so that you can grate it onto the salad. I don't think I would do something soft. But it, you just need the acid and a good
well,
oil.
The hard cheeses
really
provide
good,
a lot of
pretty
the salt,
oil.
So.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean, when you,
definitely.
You,
I like the
extra
idea
virgin olive oil or...
Cilantro. Mm-hmm.
I've also done that with hazelnut oil, and it was quite nice.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You just have to be a little more sparing with that.
Right, right. You don't want to overwhelm the flavor. But the other thing is, the other thing I was super excited about, you know, because we will get tomatoes, is I'm just absolutely excited to make gazpacho. And I thought I would share how we do that, because it's sort of a labor of love, but you don't have to turn a piece of equipment on. You don't have to heat up your kitchen, and it's worth it if you don't mind just standing there and, you know, improving your knife skills or using your great knife skills wherever you are in your skill level, but just doing a brunoise, what we call a brunoise, or a small dice of the fruit, the tomatoes.
You think if someone bought some of the cherry tomatoes coming right now, and they're very nice.
You can certainly make it with that. I don't like all the skin. That's the thing. That's why I like to use a large tomato, because I don't really want all that skin. You know, a little bit of those would be fine. I mean, you could certainly make it with it. But I prefer a larger tomato and dropping off some of the skin on the outside. We often will peel just at least the outside off or most of the outside, and take the stem out. But we use all of the juice. And to me, that is the key to making, you know, having a really good extra rich in olive oil and really scraping all the juice from the tomato.
The soup is really about the juice and
exactly,
the vegetables.
Exactly, exactly.
Let's take a call, and we'll talk a little more about gazpacho. Sherry in Owings Mills, how are you?
Hi, Sherry. You're on the air, Sherry.
You talking to me?
Yes
ma'am.
Hi, how are you?
Sorry, I didn't realize I was going to be on so quickly. I have two recipes that I like to share that I do in the summertime, especially in this kind of heat.
Great.
I don't like to turn the oven on, so when I make dinner, I made this weekend in a very, very nice, simple curry with potatoes and sweet potatoes and carrots and spinach, and I put some cubed chicken in there, onions, garlic, cilantro, and lots of ginger. Whatever curry spice you have in the house, which usually will have cumin and coriander and paprika and turmeric in there. I like one that has a little bit of pepper and mustard in there also. You just put some of that in there, and you put it in the pot with some coconut milk, or if you don't do coconut milk, you can put, if you do regular milk, you can put regular milk or yogurt in there. I just do coconut milk. And a little bit of mango curry in there. And my whole family just loves it. You can serve that over rice, and it makes a meal for 2 days. Other one is doing patty pan squash into pancakes. With
that sort of thing can be great.
With breadcrumbs and egg and spices.
Excellent.
That's great.
Thanks,
Thank you, Sherry. Thank you so much.
So let's, would you mind, let's back up on gazpacho.
Sure.
You're talking about using really juicy heirloom tomatoes to make it.
Mm-hmm. And we put a little bit, very little bit of shallot in. We use fresh herbs, so fresh basil. And, I mean, we're getting some gorgeous basil, so that's really exciting. A little bit of chives, which helps to kind of give an onion flavor. A good extra virgin olive oil. It becomes part of the sort of the broth or the soup aspect of the gazpacho. And I use something that's usually pretty fruity, flowery, almost, not something rich and dark and really olivey.
Maybe Provençal or a Spanish oil.
Mm-hmm. And salt and pepper. And a little bit, you know, in the form of pepper, I prefer peppers. I prefer to use Tabasco. I like the flavor of Tabasco. We'll put a few drops in. We will add a tiny bit of water if we feel like we don't have quite enough juice, but hopefully we're going to get enough juice from our tomatoes. And a little bit of poblano pepper. If you like that tone.
Poblanos can be good in there.
Yeah, I really like poblano, and I'm not fond of bell peppers, so I really prefer the tone of something like that.
It's not as dominating.
Right, a poblano. And that's it. And cucumber, I'm sorry. So what we do, and I think it's kind of fun.
You used to make these little scoops,
tiny
right?
Parisian scoop or melon ball or whatever you want to call it. I buy, whenever I go to France, I kind of gobble them up anywhere I can find them, although things are more accessible now with the way that the world is. But there was a time, you know, 15 years, 20 years ago, where I would buy every single small Parisian scoop I could find and bring them back. I mean, they're really tiny. I don't even know how to say. I mean, they're bigger than a pinhead, but not much bigger than that. And it just makes little cute little cucumber balls. And we usually add a decent amount of that. I mean, obviously the soup base is the tomato product. And the cucumber gives you a little nice crunch. And so that's really fun. And you want to make it and serve it that day. That's not something you want to make the day before. I don't know if anybody would disagree with me on that, and I'd love to hear it if you do, and I'd love to hear your reason. But yeah, it's typically something you want to make fresh, but you do want to let it sit a little bit before you eat it so that the flavors can marry.
I think for things to actually become seasoned, to become themselves, to become seasoned.
And for everything to sort of, you know, the basil to do its thing and the chives and the juices to marry, blend together. So
any garnishes, breadcrumbs?
I garnish mine with lobster. So chilled.
If you don't have lobster around, do you suggest any other garnishes?
Shrimp.
Though lobster sounds great.
Shrimp. You could put a little crab meat on there. And we put creme fraiche on. And the lady was just talking about curry. I put a tiny bit of curry in my creme fraiche. So if you don't want to have the seafood, you can just garnish it with the curried creme fraiche. That's what I do. Do you make gazpacho?
A couple of different versions over time. We've done it with heirloom tomatoes and watermelon. We were talking about watermelon earlier.
Mm-hmm.
That can be fantastic. And cilantro and a little bit of chili with some pop to it. It's nice to have the fresh and cool and not just the acid, but a little bit of heat to that is also good.
Yeah, I like heat in there.
Also done it very classically, a bit the way that you have, but with bells and garnish it with like warm garlic almond breadcrumbs.
Okay.
That's fun. Pretty old-fashioned. So let's take a break for a minute. And when we come back, we're taking your calls, 410-662-8780, or email us foremanwolf@wipr.org. We're talking about cooking without heating up your house on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine on WIPR.
This is your public radio, member supported, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine, where I'm actually here on time. This is Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we are live.
We're live. Call
us. Quite clearly. Give us a ring, 410-662-8780. Or email us, foremanwolf@wipr.org, or do what a few other listeners have done, and hit us up on Instagram.
Yeah, I like that. That's fun.
And we have...
I like the person that Instagrammed and said, champagne! With a lot of exclamation points after it. You're my kind of person.
It's very cold champagne. I tell you, everyone who's coming into dinner last night, would you like to go right to the table, or would you like to have a cold bottle of champagne poured
over your head? I wanted that in the middle of service last night.
Somehow wine with bubbles always seems cooler.
It was so hot. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. So, yeah. Bubbles are good.
We have an email with Charles in Charles Village who has a plan. Can't bear to turn on the stove today, so I'm mixing a salad of fresh diced avocado, mango, lump crab, cilantro, lime, and jalapeno.
Yes.
Scoop it up with some tortillas and snack on that all day.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
That sounds like
a solid
plan.
I want that.
That would work out with good. That vino verde with the watermelon slice floating in it,
there
Charles.
You go.
No question. Let's talk to Christina in Sparks.
Hi, Christina.
Hello.
I used to live in Sparks. That's a great place to live.
I know you did. It's great. Yep. Although in a year or two, I think I'm moving to Washington State.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. That's a big change.
I decided that I'd like to live for at least part of my life where I can look out one window and see the Pacific Ocean and look out another window and see mountains.
That sounds...
Cascade or Olympic, it doesn't matter.
Amazing.
And they've got great organic food out there in CSAs, just like we do here.
Good for you.
That's great.
Do it. That's exciting.
That's great. So while you're here, what you got?
So this is a recipe with no cooking. And I found it to be quite popular. I don't have all the ingredients with me, but just an overview. It's a wild blueberry pie. And you take dates and pretty much any kind of nut you want. Puree the nuts. So you do have to turn on the food processor. and then mix it and puree the dates in with it. You have to sip the dates, of course. And I think I used a little bit of lemon or lime juice with that. And then mix the dates with the frozen wild blueberries and with half of the frozen wild blueberries. And then you stir in the rest of the blueberries. So some are Holland, some are puree. And then you fill the pie crust with it, and it's ready to go. It's super, super, super sweet. So it goes very good with like a lemony ice cream or a lemon sorbet.
Great.
That maybe you've made without a whole lot of sugar with it. And then when I'm doing it for a potluck, for my book group, I did it in small tartlet shell. You would have used tartlet shells. I used my muffin tin or my cupcake thing, and I just pressed and made these little tart shells and then chilled them, took them out, and filled them with the blueberry mix.
Great. Sounds good, Christina.
It'll go well with the listener who just said champagne exclamation
point. There you go. Thank you, Christina. That's awesome.
I'm not sure about the champagne over your head there.
we were hot. We were
Cindy,
hot.
Cindy
we
just wants to win something.
We were very hot in the kitchen last night.
You have to do that just before you jump into the pool.
There you go.
Yeah.
Thank you, Christina.
Thanks,
all for all you shared.
Thank you.
Especially the local stuff.
Bye-bye. Keep cool.
Thank you.
Let's talk to Kurt in Perry Hall. Kurt, go ahead.
Hey, Kurt.
Hey, guys. Dinner at Charleston was excellent last night, as always, but especially that quail.
Thank you very much.
Great.
Thank you.
Hey, it's hot, even though I shouldn't be cooking most of the morning. I am. But I was thinking about the Italians and how they do cook in the morning, serve in the afternoon pasta dishes, at room temperature. What are some of your thoughts on that and perhaps concoctions?
Well, I mean, if you can avoid cooking pasta ahead, you want to do that. You would do everything else. You know, you would make, if what you meant to serve was pasta that was served as a room temperature dish, the chilled pasta salad thing, you really wouldn't see there.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not unreasonable to cook and then cool, like dress and cool something when it comes out, even if you're just dressing with oil and basil and maybe crushed almonds and breadcrumbs and little cherry tomatoes and black olives or something, the Calabrian olives that are oil cured that have like a really punchy flavor.
Yeah.
And a little bit of Calabrian chili oil, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
At room temperature, as long as you had plenty of oil for that pasta and the pasta was well seasoned, would be lovely. But not out of the fridge, no, because the texture changes on the pasta. You know, that's you want the pasta after cooking, so you would have to turn the stove on and boil water.
I know one of the cold dishes we had when we were in Italy one time was almost like a frittata that was cold. It did have truffles in it, which obviously you don't need to do.
It's almost like a tortilla española.
Yeah, it was so good. And that was nice to have something like that that obviously had been made that morning. And,
yeah,
and
exactly.
It was incredible. Thanks, Kurt.
Yep.
Thanks, Kurt. It makes me think of my grandmother used to get up early in the morning. She would have gone to market either the day before or early that morning, and she would, she'd fry her chicken in the morning. She would make fresh pickles in the morning, and you'd have them, 6-8 hours later in the afternoon for proper dinner at 3 o'clock.
Sure. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Get up when it's cool, or cooler,
and
do your work and
do that cooking, and then
and then it's ready, and that's a great thing.
Do what you can on the stovetop instead of in the oven.
Yeah,
because the ovens would really heat the place up.
Yeah, definitely, and holds heat too. So,
but yeah, just boiling water to cook corn, fine. You don't have to roast it on the husk, even though that's just great.
Well, and cold seafood salads. I mean, we live in seafood territory, so. Just doing some sort of cold, whether it's calamari or...
I like Charles's little idea of the crab and avocado salsa.
Oh, definitely. I love that idea. Or just, something with a mayonnaise-based salad that everybody's sort of used to, or doing something with olive oil and citrus and fresh herbs. But just, having something that maybe you boil off shrimp earlier in the day and you make a salad and put it in the refrigerator, and then that's ready for you to go to later.
We have an Instagram comment from The Broken Plate, who looks like a brilliant jewelry maker.
She is.
She said she's planning some foil packets for the grill if they're even hungry today.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of fun. I always loved that when my dad did that when I was
a
kid.
It just makes you feel like you went to camp.
Exactly. Yeah, and that brings back so many memories.
The potatoes never cook. The potatoes never cook.
Yeah, and you know, the onions, my dad used to, it was always really good when my dad did it, but yeah, I'm kind of with you on the potatoes. Well, they need to be thin, that's all.
Yeah.
They just need to be thin, or you could just boil them before and, you know, slice it up and put it in there, and that way you don't have to worry about it.
The other thing to minimize, I mean, to maximize fresh produce and to minimize, and honestly, to maximize health and to minimize the cooking time, if you have a wok or if you have something that doubles as a vessel that will work for a stir fry,
mm-hmm.
I mean, today's your day. If you want something hot, today's your day to do that.
Just
and it's the season of the year for it. I mean, that's there's so much product to play with.
Because
That's, I mean, that at most, if you're using shrimp or chicken, I mean, chicken's a little bit longer, but shrimp,
cut it in
shrimp,
little pieces.
3 minutes, 4 minutes, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not small talking shrimp. About much time at all.
Mm-hmm. Or scallops.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I like that you can get some wild shrimp at the grocery stores here now, too. So that's really nice. And I like to cook shrimp like that in the shell. I mean, they're just shrimp. If you do it, you have to peel them, but wow, do they taste really good. And it just really helps the texture of shrimp when you cook them in the shell.
So what's the hottest kitchen you ever been in?
Oh, well.
That you ever worked in?
Well, I worked in Charleston. So, I mean, any kitchen I worked
Charleston,
in Charleston.
South Carolina. Yeah.
East South Carolina. So when I first came out of culinary school, I was just talking about this because it was so hot in our kitchen the other night. And to one of my cooks, and I told her that one of the things about that kitchen was it fed two restaurants, and the men that owned the restaurant were older European men. So this was in the 80s, so they were probably in their 60s. So they came up during the time when, you know, there's probably some very old style work going on in Europe. Actually, they were Austrian German.
There's not a lot of air conditioning in Austria.
No, exactly. So the kitchen, their kitchen, it was good size, but it, you know, the line was cramped. I remember that, and it was a straight line, so you're like a typical kitchen. So we were standing next to each other, and I just recall that they did this thing that I was not used to, which I think is probably very old fashioned European. They would put red tablecloths on all the work surfaces. And I had never seen that before. And I'm like, first of all, how do you clean your work table? I don't even understand this. I couldn't get my head wrapped around it in any way, shape, or form. And it was just like the hottest thing in the world. I felt like, why don't we just wrap ourselves in these things then? Because, I mean, it was like, and then they would bring us hot drinks. So when you asked for something to drink when you were online, they would bring you hot drinks and say, this is what you should be drinking. And I'm like, okay, what, are you trying to torture us?
So it was horrible. Next time I see you really sweating in the kitchen,
you bring me a hot drink,
I'll just bring you hot cocoa and you'll feel so much younger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll just feel so much younger. I'll bring back all the memories. I didn't work there very long, and there's a reason for that. But yeah, and back in that time when I was working in Charleston during the South Carolina during the 1980s, I don't know of any kitchen that had air conditioning back then. And you know, you're talking summertime from April to October, and you're talking high humidity, well, which we have here as well, but really high temperatures. And I just remember, because I had moved, my mom and dad had lived in Northern Indiana prior to moving to Charleston, South Carolina. And that's where I grew up. I lived in Indiana through the last year of high school. And, you know, where I grew up, you know, it might get in the 80s or something, maybe even to the 90s, but at night it would always cool down. And when I moved to Charleston, I'm just like, wow, you know what? It was 98 degrees earlier today, and now it's 96 at midnight. It's endless. So, you know, the lack of air conditioning is a little tough in kitchens, but I'm sure that's changed. Those were the good old days, or the bad old days.
Yeah, I don't ever recall working in a kitchen that had
AC. And people used to smoke cigarettes in the kitchen. Back then too. Totally freaked me out. I mean, I had a chef that I worked for when I came onto the line, he had one of those, you know, cutting boards on the garbage on the station on this, we call it a sandwich unit. It was a white plastic cutting board that would fit onto the countertop. And there were like 45 burn marks on the end by the wall. And I'm like, what in the world? And I walked in and then we started working and he just like lit a cigarette. It was a small, it was a 35 seat restaurant. And he lit a cigarette and then it went on to the countertop and then he started sauteing and he smoked a cigarette. I'm like, wow, yeah, didn't know that went on. The old days.
Yeah, there was kitchens were a little more Wild West once upon a time. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Yeah, that chef used to throw his wooden clogs at people.
Well, that happens, you know. The chef I worked for in Philadelphia.
Used to stab people?
Jean-Pierre.
The one that liked to stab people?
Well, he only stabbed me a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
I was his favorite. I swear to God, I was his favorite. Jean-Pierre is about 6'7". He was the chef of the Union League. Mm-hmm. You know, there were 19 dining rooms in that place. And
oh my
I was
gosh.
The sous chef for one little dining room where we did the...
The one where you did 10 people?
We would serve like... We'd get rocked and do 32 people, you know? we served a lot of courses and we served some nice dishes. But yeah, it was not the pressure gig. I just had to come ground up every day because he'd throw away your mise en place.
Yeah, and then he'd stab you.
Well, if you spoke,
and why did he?
Because I spoke in the kitchen.
You spoke.
Yes.
Yeah, I just want to clear that up. Spoke.
There was no speaking.
Yeah.
No speaking. No, I did not. Never smoked.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's Jean-Pierre. I mean, we did keep a place clear on the wall, by the line, on the big line in that club.
I know what's coming.
Oh, we kept a stack of chip plates.
Oh, gosh.
The general manager of the club asked us to keep all the chip plates. So when Jean-Pierre got completely pissed off, we had that space clear, and he could just have a stack of plates to throw against the wall.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So they'd already been damaged. They couldn't use them. And GM was smart.
Hey,
he saved himself a bunch of money.
Yeah,
you know?
when you get a chef throwing
so,
them.
So he had a good, had a good arm,
thing.
Too. An Alsatian guy.
I don't
guy.
Believe in that.
Could have played baseball. So we've got an email from Willis and Waverly. Hello, Willis. I don't drink, but I'm addicted to seltzer and have been experimenting with making shrubs, which is basically drinking vinegar. Willis, you're beginning to lose me here. With all the good fruit available now, I dice the seconds of bruised fruit into about 2 cups. Add a cup of sugar to it and let it macerate in the fridge for 24 to 48 hours. Then I strain it and mix it with vinegar. You only need a few tablespoons in a glass
Yum.
Of seltzer to make a really refreshing and fun mocktail.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, I like that
you can,
a lot.
Especially, I mean, I guess Willis is able to drink with the season.
There you go.
You know?
Go Willis.
There's purslane. There's purslane in the market today, Willis.
Oh,
that would make a very, very interesting shrub.
That's fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, purslane in some of the white peaches. Well, here we go. Right on time. From Lois, in a blender, add white peaches, Häagen-Dazs vanilla bean, ice cream, I presume, crystallized ginger, soft, and Bellini. Over ice and top with basil. If you can find ginger ice cream, it's really great.
Oh, that sounds good.
And you don't need the vanilla bean ice cream and ginger.
Okay. Yum. Okay. All righty.
So we are live. You can reach us, and you're getting us on Instagram, and you're getting us on email as well. Call us 410-662-8780. Email us formandawolf@wypr.org, and we'll be back shortly on Form and a Wolf on Food and Wine, WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today. You're getting to us via the telephone, 410-662-8780, or email foremanwolf@wipr.org. We're talking about how in the world you feed yourself without heating up your house any further on this God-blessed day.
Mm-hmm.
And folks are also getting us through the Charleston Restaurant Instagram account. Newbie Chef on Instagram asks... Cindy, would you explain how to make ceviche?
I would love to because I love making ceviche. So
it's a
I'll
good
just,
summer for it, that's
oh,
for
gosh.
Sure.
Oh, gosh. And we'll just use shrimp, and certainly you can make scallop ceviche or whatever you want, fish ceviche. I use small shrimp, cut them in half horizontally, and wash them a couple of times in cold water, just water, cold water, just to really kind of make sure they're super nice. And obviously no tail, no head, no nothing, just clean shrimp and
deveined.
Excuse me. And then I squeeze fresh lime juice, and you want enough lime juice to just cover them. But they need to be completely covered, put them in the refrigerator. And then you can start hitting the rest of the steps, which is red onion, super thinly sliced. And those also get soaked in ice, cold water. And speaking of ice water, if the water out of your tap is not as cold as you would like it to be, which happens this time of the year, depending on, you know, sort of where you live, I always found my well water to be very, very cold, but sometimes city water can be a little bit too warm. Put some ice cubes in there. But put the very, very thinly sliced red onion in and just rinse it a couple of times and remove that from the water and just pop it in the refrigerator while you're doing the rest of your mise en place. Very finely, well, not finely, a little bit roughly chopped cilantro. And cilantro can be very sandy, so you do want to make sure that you take the leaves off the stem. You don't want the stem, and wash the leaves and then pat them dry gently and then chop them sort of, not fine, but just a step above, let's say fine. Once the shrimp have had a chance, oh, and then now that those shrimp have been in the refrigerator for a moment and are getting cold again, go ahead and add a little bit of salt to that lime juice and stir and just sort of see where they are. And then when they're done, which usually only takes about, I don't know, maybe 45 minutes, if they're small shrimp, they won't take very long to change their texture and sort of look opaque rather than clear, then knock some of that lime juice off and add the red onion, the cilantro. And I like a little bit of habanero pepper in mine. You could certainly use, and I would finely chop the habanero. You could certainly use jalapeno if you prefer, or any other kind of pepper. You know, it's your heat preference. You could use an extremely crazy hot pepper if that's what you prefer. And a friend of mine would make a mixture of mango and habanero and would actually just sort of eat that with the ceviche rather than adding it to the ceviche, which I like a lot. And so there's a million different ways to make it, but that's sort of a basic recipe. Make sure your salt is there.
So mango and habanero blended almost like a condiment.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's, wow, so good with
seasoned.
It. Seasoned. Yeah. Especially just a little salt, especially if the ceviche itself does have, again, maybe a little habanero in it or enough jalapeno that it made it spicy. It's really nice to have that sweet mango and spicy sweet mango with it. Really fun. I love ceviche. I think it's really
a perfect dish for today.
It is. And it's a fascinating thing because like all old cultures, you know, each region, each country that makes ceviche makes it differently. And as again, I've said this many times, down to a family will make it the way that they've always made it. And I love that. I just, you're walking in the footsteps of, you know, the people before you that this has been an important dish to their families. And you replicate that. You have continued on a tradition. And I think that is extremely important with cooking.
There's connection in that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a heritage to cooking. It's one of the reasons why we feel good about it.
Oh, definitely.
So we've got a call from Jeff in Baltimore.
Oh, hi, Jeff.
Jeff, it sounds like you have problems.
Hey, how's it going? Yeah. Hey, Foreman and Wolf, I celebrate your broadcast. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I was with some friends in Maine. We got some lobsters from a lobster catcher.
Excellent.
it was wonderfully affordable because of the, you know, locale. And it was exciting. And none of us had ever prepared lobster before. So we just, you know, did a cursory Google search. We did the steam at the bottom of the pot. You know, we boiled the water and put the big colander in and steamed them live alive.
Oh,
yeah.
Which felt a certain way for some of us. But
yeah.
Anyway, it was wonderful until I ate my tail. And for some mysterious reason, everything was delicious. But my tail, which had the texture of like an enormous shrimp, I think, tasted like some sort of nightmarish medicine taste.
Oh my God.
The whole way through.
Oh my God.
That, and no one could explain it, and we couldn't find anything. Speaking of nightmares, we couldn't find anything on the internet about it.
I've never heard of that in my life, and I've cooked, I mean, gajillions of lobsters. Now, the medicine thing, I don't know. I'm just curious, was the roe in it? Did it have roe in the tail?
I didn't see anything.
Well, you would see it. If it was there, it would be bright red after you cooked it. Okay. Wow. I can't even imagine. I will tell you, just so you can feel a little bit better about cooking lobsters the next time, if I hate to say this out loud, but I'm going to say it. If you run a knife through their head and crack open that will kill them. That way you're not slowly steaming them to death. So I would suggest doing that the next time. I would also honestly suggest just boiling them the next time. I've never steamed.
It doesn't make
in my life.
It makes no difference.
Well, you can do either way, but yeah. I'm saying that's how I cook my lobsters. And I will tell you, for a 1 pound cull lobster, which is a cull is a lobster that's lost one of its claws. I cook those for 6 to 7 minutes in a huge pot of boiling water. So just remember that for the next time, because gosh, you know, getting fresh lobsters right out of the water. I mean, they couldn't be better. That's so exciting. And then what a disappointment.
That
was for you
there, because we did it for 20 minutes.
That might be why they tasted bad. I don't know where the medicine taste came from, but yeah, I mean, that's why I boil them, because steam is sort of, you don't really know what's happening there. I know exactly what's happening. If I have a big pot of boiling water and it returns to its boil, you know, that's why you want a big pot. I mean, you know, it depends on how many lobsters you're doing. Surely you're not cooking 20 lobsters. Maybe you are, then you need a huge pot. But yeah, make that water boil. Don't put anything in it. You don't have to even do anything to the water. Just bring it to a boil and drop those lobsters in after you've taken care of them. And 6 to 7 minutes and you should be in great shape.
I think the timing was the issue. I appreciate it.
Sure,
next time
absolutely.
I will take your execution
advice. If you master the boiling the lobster, call back and I'll give you a lobster grilling recipe.
Oh, I will. Okay, thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Good call.
Bye-bye.
Fun. Yeah. I love it. I love that, because he's not the only person that's had an issue cooking lobsters. So I'm glad that
cool
he does that.
Questions.
He called. Exactly. I love hearing from people. It's fun.
We got an email from Barb in Baltimore. Subject line's the best subject line of all time.
Oh, does it say champagne and truffles?
It says ice cream. Come on.
Ice cream?
Come on. It's not all champagne
and
truffles.
I know some people that are friends of mine that really would like that subject line.
I avoid a hot kitchen by leaving the house. I heard about the Charmery when David Alima was a guest on your show.
Yum.
Super nice man.
Yeah, and great when ice cream.
Yep. When I'm being oppressed by the heat and humidity, I take a walk up at the Charmery.
Oh, that's neat.
They always have the most fun environment.
Yeah.
You know,
it is fun.
Translate is air conditioned and unique, tasty flavors. Mm-hmm. Thanks for the introduction. You're welcome, Barb.
That's cool. Thank you, Barb.
Yeah. No, that's ice cream is definitely the best subject line today.
Yeah, we all scream for it today.
You're going to scream when you get this chef's challenge.
Okay. Probably not, Tony.
You are.
All right.
If for no other reason than because of my handwriting.
Yeah, exactly. Peppers, eggplant. My choice, garlic, onion.
Shishito
thank
peppers.
You, Tony. Garlic, onion, ginger, green beans, green tomatoes, blueberries, beet, greens, golden beets. Wow, could you give me some more? 21, 25 shrimp, no heads, no dairy. Oh, Tony. Canola
no
oil,
dairy.
Sesame seeds, coriander seeds, cilantro, basil, baby carrots, white peaches.
It's too hot for dairy.
Peppers and peaches and some green tomatoes. Yeah.
Make something. I'm hungry.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The beet greens, I'm going to wash really, really well, pull out the center stem, and even though they're pretty, and julienne the greens, because if I'm not cooking something, it's going to have to be pretty fine. They need to be young and tender.
There's no stipulation on cooking.
I like the idea.
You can cook if you
want. Oh, I thought
you
said I couldn't cook.
I would appreciate it if you didn't heat the house for a long time.
Okay, I'd like a green tomato to be fried then. So I'm going to fry my green tomatoes, because I love green tomatoes with salad. And I have to cook the eggplants. So I'm just going to go ahead and fry the eggplants and the green tomatoes. So when I do green tomatoes, I do cornmeal, a fine cornmeal with just a tiny bit of cayenne pepper. And I don't salt the tomatoes until they come out of the fryer, or if obviously you're doing it in a pan on your stove, and I cook in peanut oil, if my guests aren't allergic to that. And the eggplant, I would do three-step breading procedure, which is flour, egg wash, which is whisked eggs with a little bit of milk or water, or just whisked eggs, and panko, and you would salt maybe something like the flour probably and the panko, and do a thin slice of eggplant. And we just got in neon eggplants, and I'm in love with them. So bias cut neon eggplant. So we're going to fry both of those things. Everything else is going to be fresh. So we're going to have the garlic, the onion, a little bit of ginger, and the peppers, the shishito peppers, with I'm going to toss that all with the blueberries, the beet greens, Obviously, I have to roast the golden beets. So those will have been roasted. Those will be quartered and go onto into the salad with the canola oil. I'll saute the sesame seeds and add the coriander to them right at the end so that I can add that to the salad. I'll finely chop the cilantro and add that in. On the side, I'm going to do white peaches with basil with a little canola oil as a side dish. And I might add a little bit of the peppers to that. And then the baby carrots. Gosh, Tony, could you give me more ingredients? And then the shrimp, I'm going to saute the shrimp with the baby carrots and toss that in with the peach business. I did it. Good job.
So,
thank you.
You know, I can lead a horse to water, but I can't make them make a stir fry. You were totally set up. I even tried to drop that thought in there.
I don't know, whatever.
Oh, my gosh. That's not your bag. All local tomato. Well, let's say cherry tomatoes because it's what's available right now. Zucchini, basil. I'm very short time on this. Yellow watermelon, peach, lettuce, plums, extra virgin olive oil, and citrus. I mean, there's nothing I can do but make a salad. I mean, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
I would use the plums to make a vinaigrette. I wish I had a little chili for it to give it a little bit of extra zip. The extra virgin olive oil, I would cut it with a little canola so it's not too strong. But lemon, chili, plum for that. Zucchini, I would slice super crazy thin, lay it out like carpaccio all around the plate. The cherry tomatoes, I would have them, marinate them in a little bit of white balsamico, salt, pepper, and some of that extra virgin oil. The yellow watermelon, I would portion slice, you know, like large dice on the yellow watermelon, small dice on the peach. The lettuce I would dress with the plum dressing. Everything else is a garnish on it. Everything is laid on top of the zucchini. And, I mean, that's...
There you go.
Yeah.
It's a summer day.
That is a nice summery salad. Thanks for the ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
The wine with your dish? I don't know. I'm sort of stuck on the vino verde.
Mm-hmm. What does vino verde mean?
Literally green wine. Yeah.
Well,
it's harvested early. It's harvested 10-11% alcohol.
Okay.
And so it really preserves acidity and snap and punch. It's
okay.
It's the kind of thing you have very, very cold in your fridge or
where does it come from?
Or on ice. From Portugal.
Portugal.
How
available
is it? Super inexpensive.
People can buy it?
It's very available in any wine shop that has.
And when they go get it, it's called Vino Verde.
Yeah, it'll say V-I-N-H-O, Vino Verde.
Vino.
And it's super inexpensive. And there are also Rosé Vino Verde out there. But that's a pretty good, you know, long, silly, foreign film, one of the salads that we propose, Vino Verde, you know. Some ice cream.
Yeah, I know I'm going to have to go get some ice cream.
Mm-hmm. Well.
What's your favorite ice cream?
Oh, that's very difficult. It's hard not to say something coffee.
I like coffee ice cream, too. Yeah. That was always my favorite.
So, thanks very much for listening. If you want to download this program or any one of our other podcasts, go to the WIPR website, WIPR.org. You can find the Foreman Wolf page and look down the long menu. And if you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Instagram as Chef Cindy Wolf. And on, no, that's the other way around. I always forget what I am. Oh, you
that's
know,
tough.
Twitter. It's Twitter.
It's tough to be you.
Know, I don't know really. In the end, yes, Chef Cindy Wolf on Twitter, Chef Wolf on Instagram.
I'm The Real Tony Foreman on Instagram. And you can email us if you want to correspond with the program, ForemanWolf@WIPR.org. And thanks for listening.
Happy Sunday.